Well, welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we are discussing Sundance 2021, reviews of Land, The Reckoning, and The Little Things. Our topic this week is, do we even rewatch movies anymore? Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron, how are you doing today?
I'm okay. I'm winded. It's been a day. How about Amanda Sink?
Hello, hello, fellas. Lads.
Delay on the fellas.
My dudes.
What's up? What do you guys, this seems really exciting. We're just,
Well, I watched a lot of movies this weekend. I gotta say that.
Yeah, that Sundance thing is interesting, how they're doing it. It's all virtual.
That's a good word for it.
It's like
interesting.
Being in Colorado. Without being invited.
You mean
to Colorado.
Utah?
Is it Utah? Yeah, that's what I meant.
It's Utah.
I said
it's
Utah.
Not Colorado.
I wished it was in Colorado.
Because of weed? Is that what it's about?
No, because I'm not.
The cannabis.
Are you one of those weeders?
No. Weeders?
So what it is? Is that the kids are calling it now? Weeders?
If by kids you mean old men like yourself, then sure.
She's got you there, old timer.
Yeah, well.
Just be careful with your
hair. I make it look good, though.
I wouldn't go that far. So, Utah, yes. Park City, Utah?
Oh, now I don't have those details. I just know it's Utah.
I just threw the first
time.
Isn't
it in Sundance, Utah, or something like that?
It's on indigenous land. I know that.
We should really know what we're talking about when we're going to talk about Sundance pretty shortly,
well,
huh?
I don't know why you're bringing it up. You didn't even know the right state.
I did. I was checking your knowledge of it.
Oh, right?
I was making sure you knew. I don't know why. It's like Colorado. Oh, shame.
I'm still dealing with the flashback from the last time I had somebody talk to us about doing some sort of, festival thing. Like, hey, this movie was supposed to be in Cannes. You should watch it for us because Cannes not going to happen.
That family movie? Family Tree? Is that what it was?
Yeah, the Family Tree. Whatever it was. Stupid.
You know what? It was nice. We always support people's work.
It's in Park City, Utah, Salt Lake City.
I think that's what I said.
And at the Sundance Resort. I was just confirming. We brought up stuff and then we didn't confirm.
I got it right the second time. So once I knew the state, I knew the city. So it's not Park City, Colorado. It's Park City,
and
Utah.
Being right the second time is almost as good as being right the first time.
It really is. All right. Well, our news roundup this week is everything that happened over the past week. Netflix is already working on a feature film adaptation of the GameStop stock insanity. If you can believe that. It's been like a few days. Frasier is looking forward toward a revival on Paramount Plus. Not Cheers, just Frasier. Wonder Woman 1984 was a huge streaming success, and that 2.25 billion minutes were viewed since its release, but that still would only equate to about $150 to $200 million at the box office. So they would have made about $800 million. So they didn't make nearly what they would have. George Clooney is producing and possibly starring in a new Buck Rogers series about that space adventurer. Paramount confirmed that Top Gun 2 will definitely hit theaters. They have no interest in going to streaming. Woo-woo. Kevin Costner just sold a pilot to ABC called National Parks about park officials solving crimes.
What?
I'm in. I am so in.
Like, whose paw print is this? Or bear print?
Yeah, I mean, I get. Well, that's actually.
What are they
going to
do? Solve, like, there's a bear shit in the woods? Yes. Yes, a bear does shit in the woods. Wah! Put the glasses on.
Tree falls. Who hears it? All of those. Yeah, all those matter. Mm-hmm. You know what? There's crimes that happen in park. I listen to a park podcast where you basically, it's just murder in national parks. If you listen to it and you're a backpacker like I am, you maybe don't want to do it as much anymore.
It could be about Bigfoot, because there is a state that's making...
Oh, stop it.
Trying to put legislation around hunting Bigfoot, like for real.
They're trying to stop hunting a fictional character?
They're trying to start. They want to start it. They want to be able to hunt Bigfoot.
Because that's what's stopping them from finding Bigfoot?
If we just had a license, we could go get him. We know where he's
at. If we could just pay money to the government, that's all we need to do to solve this.
That's real?
It's real, I swear to God.
Bigfoot isn't?
That's partly why, like, that. Well, it's not partly. That's why there's resistance on this becoming real legislation. But there's, for real, I can't remember if he was a senator or if he was a House. Some elected official was like, yeah, we need to do this.
This is where our tax dollars go. Like, we're constantly wondering, why doesn't Congress get anything done? Well, this is probably why.
Like, what's next? Is like Florida going to do something where it's permitted to do snipe hunting?
Probably.
If anyone would, it would be Florida. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably at Universal Studios, they'll open that up. It'll be one of the attractions.
Florida man, dot, dot, dot. Florida woman, dot, dot, dot. Just fill in the blanks.
If you're missing a face, you found the snipe.
What?
Bath salts thing.
Oh, gotcha. All right. I'm not.
Right.
I don't live in Florida.
Sorry, you're not up on the Florida lingo of what happens to people here.
All right. To finish, John Chu has finally been tapped to direct Universal's Wicked adaptation. Over the past week, we've lost Cloris Leachman, Screech's Dustin Diamond, I guess he wasn't saved by the bell, Hal Holbrook, and Cicely Tyson.
Wow, you did not.
I'm sorry. And lastly, Ryan Coogler is continuing his relationship with Disney by bringing Black Panther Kingdom of Wakanda to Disney Plus as a standalone series. And they announced this on the very first day of Black History Month. We see you, Disney. We see you. So of all of that, what really stood out to you the most, other than obviously Dustin Diamond's family is probably not going to appreciate me very much?
Well, I mean, Dustin Diamond's family, and I guess everyone who wants to be mad at you for trying to call out Disney for doing something on Black History Month Day.
I just thought it was, I didn't like the timing of it. I mean, I get it. It's important. I didn't like the timing of it. I felt like, I don't know.
When do you want them to
like
do that?
Like cheap. PR ploy?
Yeah, I thought it was more of a PR ploy. Okay. I mean, it works great, and it's great that they're doing it. It's just, I just felt like, you know, maybe we should be celebrating Black accomplishments, and I think it's great that they're doing the series. I just felt like the timing was a little.
You might want to backtrack. You're starting to dig a hole. Like this.
You know,
is
speaking of
Black,
accomplishments, Dustin Diamond passing away. That's something else, right? And anyone else kind of bothered by this?
Well. I mean, that we're in the same age range. That bothers me.
Yeah, same age range. He was diagnosed a month ago with lung cancer.
Stage 4, right?
Stage 4, a month ago. It was like, hey, I don't feel so good. I got this cough. I hurt all over. And all of a sudden, he's dead.
Yeah, that happens, man. That's stage 4. What do you think? It's a conspiracy?
I'm just facing my mortality. He's a year younger than I am.
Don't bring this down. Don't bring it down.
Anyway.
don't do it. Let's talk about Kevin Costner and how he's still alive. Let's talk about that and how he's making this great park
show. I think we just went off of this whole little tangent about, like, you know, snipe hunting and Bigfoot hunting and what happens, the bear sitting in the woods. I mean, do we need a show like this?
Yes, I do. I do. I mean, I like scenery and nature and whatnot. And if you're going to have me, there's going to be crime solved at the same time. I'm all on board. I go backpacking like several times a year. I have never seen these crimes, so I don't know what's going on, but I can't wait to find out.
It's going to be like a bunch of guys in short shorts and tan shirts, like riding around on quads. Like, you know, it's going to be Baywatch, but in the national park.
Still sold. You're not killing me on this.
All right. Well, all right. That's all you, man. I'll let you have it.
The thing I'm most excited about is this GameStop Netflix movie adaptation thing that's going to happen. Why? And I know some of you are laughing and you're like, why does this isn't going to be worthwhile? Okay, they made Spotlight, and how many Oscars did that get nominated for?
That was a little bit more riveting. It's about an entire sex
this
scandal
in the
Catholic
Church. This is pretty
riveting
when you think about it.
No,
I mean,
no, it wasn't. It was like nerds beat
Wall
Street.
Also, I meant the big short, not Spotlight, right?
Also, yeah. Huge yeah. Housing crisis affected millions. Right. This is like... Nerds made a few bucks. That's awesome. I congratulate them, and I'm glad they beat the man.
It's not about nerds making a few bucks. It's about the inequity of the market, of the quote-unquote free market, about regular old folks being able to have access to something. And when they do the same thing that those with wealth do, which are allowed to do it all of the time,
that's true.
When the little people do it, then all of a sudden it's a giant thing, and stock trading apps are literally restricting the attainment of those stocks simply because it affects the people with money negatively. I mean, that's a pretty big story when you think about it.
There's like four or five guys who lost their second or third house or both of those houses.
Right. And they might miss a yacht payment.
You know, I don't want to watch a movie about these guys. Oh, you know what? Maybe I do want to watch a movie about these guys losing all their money. That sounds like a...
From them, they literally...
You know what? Now I'm in.
Their business is banking on other businesses to fail.
Yeah, that's true.
And not only did they do that, they also were short selling on stocks that didn't exist. Like, when you think about the wild happenings of this story and how it just continued and continued, where you literally have, not to get political, but Ted Cruz and AOC agreeing on something, the world is literally going to just explode when something like that happens. It's a wild story. And I think Netflix can turn it into something really great with some powerful leads, throw some Tom Hanks in there, make it something good like The Post, and boom, boom, Oscar season, here we go, baby.
Maybe we can...
Don't forget DJ TJ also agreed also on the whole thing. So it's like Ted Cruz, DJ TJ, and AOC.
It's weird. It's weird when people agree. It's 2021 right now. I don't feel comfortable with it because I don't understand it. It doesn't happen anymore.
I mean, you kind of sold me. I really had no interest before, and I probably don't want to watch the movie, but I can see how it could be riveting to some. I could see why they would get excited about that. I mean, that seems to have caught people by storm. It was amazing to me. They shut down that Robinhood app.
Yeah.
And this is why Amanda's so passionate about it, is because she was starting to get into the whole stock thing. And I'm like, wow, now I can't buy anything more.
Well, no, it affected my existing AMC stocks. Like, first of all, you're screwing me over. But that's not why I was fascinated by this whole thing. I had very, very little in the scheme of things invested in any portfolio, and I had no GameStop stock. But
nobody did.
A lot of people.
Including GameStop.
But it's a wild story, and I think it could be something fascinating put to screen.
All right. Well, I'm excited about Buck Rogers, but I don't want George Clooney to do it. I just feel like he's too old. I don't mean that.
Yeah,
to be
he's
rude,
too old. Like, if it was George Clooney 10 years ago, that'd be one thing. But I don't, like, George Clooney now is not the same guy. He doesn't have I don't think he carries the same sort of weight. I would like to see somebody, you know, late 30s, early 40s, not somebody mid 50s, almost 60.
That's generous. I think it's fascinating to me because you have a character who's just prime for, somebody early 40s. Like, that's the role. It's Han Solo, really, from the first Star Wars, essentially. And you're going to put in his grandpa, or his dad. His dad. Not his grandpa, his dad.
His dad.
And I'm not knocking his age, Amanda, because I'm not too far from it. I wouldn't want to be Buck Rogers either, because I don't think I'd fit the part. I just, you know, if they can
Ryan
make it
Gosling,
work.
Ryan Gosling. He's about
40. Would work.
Sure.
He would work.
Sure.
Ryan Gosling would work. The other guy.
Bradley
the
Cooper.
The other guy.
Bradley Cooper. The staples.
Bradley Cooper. I keep on thinking Jake Gyllenhaal. He would be perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's too edgy. I mean, he'd make Buck Rogers really, really damaged. He'd be dealing with a whole lot of problems that we don't. I want Buck Rogers to be fun.
Chris Evans, but he's a little bit younger.
Does he need all the money?
Yes.
Apparently. Definitely not Chris, the other Chris.
Hemsworth?
Damn it.
Hemsworth, Pine. What's the...
Pratt?
What's the one guy? Pratt. That's his name.
Definitely
the
not
one
Chris
guy.
Pratt.
Why, that's where his career is.
Why not
is.
The one guy? Well, yeah, this isn't Blockbuster, man. You don't come in at random. Movie with that one dude. Why him? Why do you not? Or actually, why not him?
Because he's already essentially playing Buck Rogers in Guardians of the Galaxy.
A dumber version.
A dumber version, yes. But we don't need him to play the smarter version of the same character he's playing right now.
So you don't want Chris Pratt to come across as more intelligent, is what you're telling me. You want to keep him dumb.
Yeah, well, he doesn't need to have everything, Aaron.
That's true. He doesn't. He's already got a Schwarzenegger. What more can he have?
He's got a Schwarzenegger. He had a Ferris. He went from absolutely nothing to now he's like one of the big names in Hollywood, even though he's kind of disappeared since he got a Schwarzenegger. So maybe the Schwarzenegger took him out. I don't know. But still, he doesn't need to have everything.
Feeling maybe, like an Aaron Rodgers situation right now.
Maybe the Schwarzenegger took him out. Have you ever heard that story? This is a total side note, but have you ever heard that story about Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was governor and he vetoed a bill that he actually, when he was vetoing the bill, he actually wrote his reasons for vetoing it in a line item, like bullet points. But if you spelled it from top to bottom, it was F-U-C-K. It was great.
I never heard that story. I did hear the story about when he brought the damn sword to the office with him to prove a point.
What point would that be?
I don't know. The point of the sword?
Why would you need to bring a sword to work? I mean, I guess, you know, Leon at the fax machine would probably clear out a little quicker if you come right around the corner with a sword.
Leon, get out of here!
That was fascinating, John. Good Arnold impression.
Hey, I try. You know, I can't do everything right.
I liked it. I wasn't being sarcastic.
Did I miss anything interesting? Probably not. Just kidding. I listened the whole time.
Okay. Well, remember, you can find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. I don't know what just happened. Join our Facebook group. We're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. And if you happen to watch us on YouTube Live, you get to hear the unedited version, which you can probably tell there's a lot that comes out. If you're a Patreon supporter, you can get stuff early. You can also get bonus content. Our show is independently funded, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. And once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content in that respective tier. We do two separate special exclusive podcasts for Patreon. So if you want extra stuff, and we talk about stuff we wouldn't talk about on this show, it's definitely worth checking out. And you can get WandaVision, which Amanda is doing now, and you'll see in your feed for the next, I don't know, however many weeks are left, she's doing that, and it releases on Patreon early. So you get
five more weeks.
Four? But who's counting?
Five. Well, no, because the episode 4 just came out. Oh, there's 5, 6, episodes. 7, 8.
All right. Well, maybe you're right. Okay.
I can count.
It's almost like you're the one doing that show. All right. You can go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider and find out more information. Now, we've got some reviews before we talk about Sundance 2021. And we're actually going to have some quicker reviews in that, but we're also going to talk about the festival itself. But John, I saw The Reckoning.
Did you see The Reckoning?
I did see The Reckoning.
Wow. Is that that movie? So it's got, she's a young widow. Her husband is like haunting her. He's a recent suicide. She's being falsely accused of being a witch by her landlord because he, you know, she won't go to Pound Town with him. It's that Reckoning, right?
Yes. That's actually, I'm going to put that in my written review. Grace refuses to go to Pound Town.
That definitely gave me like a head tilt. Is that really in the story?
Wow. Is it really in the story, Aaron?
It feels like the wrong thing to say. How about that?
So anyhow, like you look at the movie poster. The movie poster looks like something that's straight out of a pulp comic book. The trailer has those goofy start-stop things that's designed to create some sort of feeling of tension and really try to like get you to watch it by that way. The lead actress seems like one of those people who's wildly attractive, even though she looks like she's surrounded by people who are covered in syphilis, and she still looks great. I guess my question, Aaron, is this movie a dumpster fire? Because it kind of looks like one.
You know, this is going to be a movie. Wow, John, way to sell it. this is going to be a movie that I think probably many fine critics are going to trash upon. And I can't really put my finger on it, but I will tell you from start to finish, I enjoyed it. From start to finish, I had a good time. It wasn't anything where I had to think too hard. It wasn't trying to be anything super deep. I mean, they are talking about the concept of women that were proclaimed witches and then they were actually burned at the stake. So, I mean, that's a deep topic. It's deep thematic material. And the whole time I kept waiting for it to kind of burst into supernatural because I'm assuming at some point, you know, Marshall has done this. He did The Descent and he's worked on Game of Thrones. So I'm like, well, at some point things are going to get crazy. We're going to get some supernatural nonsense. But it's very grounded, and the only time there's any possibility of a supernatural mystique is through her dreams, through the things that she imagines in her mind. But I enjoyed the film from start to finish. So no, I absolutely would not say it's a dumpster fire. Like it's a good kickback with your friends, watch it, video on demand rental, just sit back and enjoy it. I enjoyed the film. It's fun. It's bloody. It's violent. It's not too graphic in either one. I mean, it's more atmosphere and selling the moments than it is, you know, gratuitous violence or gratuitous sex, which is funny because it feels very Game of Thronesy, but it doesn't go quite full Game of Thrones. And I enjoyed it.
Well, that sounds great. So Charlotte Kirk, who's the lead actress, I believe, in this, I don't know her from anything. Can you tell me about what she did here?
Yeah, well, the entire film, she's basically trying to stay strong because she has a young daughter who is being seen as the daughter of a witch because, she refused the sexual advances and that gentleman proclaimed her a witch because he was pissed. He's just pissed off and he did it to be spiteful. And so she's trying to stay strong so she can get through this because back in these days, you know, they did a lot of horrible things to try to get you to confess to being a witch. And then there's a good chance you're going to get burned at the stake anyway. So I don't really know what the point of it is other than you get burned faster. And she's trying to make sure that because she saw the same thing happen to her mother, she doesn't want her daughter to have to go through the same stigma that she did. So really, she's basically tormented through the whole film, but she's trying to remain strong. She gives a good performance. You know, it's not going to win an Oscar or anything, but it was good enough for this role.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds like you would be willing to see anything else she does coming up.
Absolutely, yep. And I enjoyed this film. Like, I was pleasantly surprised when it was over. I'm like, I don't know what people, because I got the vibe, man. I've been doing this a long time. That feels like a movie that critics are going to trash. And I'm going to be writing a review. Mine's not going to be that way. It's going to be positive because I think it's okay to enjoy a movie, even if it isn't perfect.
Well, what's your final score on this?
Of $10 full price of admission, I would give The Reckoning $6.
Cool.
Well, the next one up on our list of films that we watched, well, Aaron and John watched, is The Little Things. Kern County Deputy Sheriff Joe Deacon is sent to Los Angeles for what should have been a quick evidence-gathering assignment. Instead, he becomes embroiled in the search for a serial killer who is terrorizing the city. Now, Aaron, when you're one of the few people I think I've seen that didn't have an issue with the ending. I'm curious.
Am I really?
Yes. I've seen a lot of people who have disdain for it because of the ending. They didn't, and I haven't seen it. So, you know, I'm not spoiling anything with anything I ask, and I don't want you to do either.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious what it is about that ending that is causing so much difference of opinion.
Let me be clear. So you want me to not spoil anything, but also to tell you why the ending doesn't work for so many people?
No, I want you to explain the reasoning without giving me the details. Like, is it because it's too ambiguous? Is it because they don't give enough explanation? Is it because it was too easy of a setup?
Got it.
I think I got this. I can do this. Hold on.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right. Don't spoil it, John. You have a thing.
Amanda?
Yeah.
It's a bit of a nothing burger ending.
Oh.
I don't agree with that at all.
Well, if you are looking for something that takes the story and has like the final climax of the story has something to do with the ending, the answer is no, it doesn't.
That's true. What John's saying is true. I would add to that.
So it's
that.
Like a sidebar ending.
No.
Like,
no.
That's, this isn't.
Hang on.
Okay.
Hang on.
Okay. All
right. I'm going to explain it as best I can. If you watch the trailer and you're watching the movie for about three quarters, John, you tell me if you agree with this. Three quarters of the way through, you think it's a certain kind of movie.
Yeah.
The last quarter, you find out the entire time the movie has been about something else. It hasn't been necessarily about what you want it to be or what the trailer led you to believe. It's actually about something else and how obsession and things can get in the way of what you're trying to do. So it ends up being about something completely different. And I know that pissed a lot of people off because I've heard many, many people tell me that. So I was, but I'm surprised that I'm the only one you've heard that actually enjoyed it. And I guess sounds like John did too.
Overall, I enjoyed it, especially just the art behind it was kind of great.
Would you agree with that about the ending though? That it's really, if you, because I rewatched it because it's HBO Max as well. So I did the theater and I came home and rewatched it. And if you watch it the way it's intended, like once the end is in your mind, it's a completely different movie in many respects.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The movie is not what you think you're going into, period. It has some great performances and it will lead you to believe it's that kind of movie, but no, it's not.
Well, let's talk about those performances. Mm. So we've got Denzel Washington, we've got Jared Leto. Those are the names that kind of resonate most with people. What is different in their performances than everything they've done before? Because no offense, and I love Denzel more than I love Jared Leto. I wouldn't even say that I hardly like him half the time anymore. But they seem to also have the same approach to the roles that they take on. Do they do anything different here that makes them stand out?
I feel like Denzel gives you a performance of like that. He's walking around and you can just feel the weight of his life pressing down on him at every given moment. He looks like a man who's about to fall apart into tears at any given moment, at any given chance. And he's trying to do the best he can to solve what it is that's in front of him. Because it's, again, what Aaron said before, you're dealing with a guy that's dealing with an obsession, but that obsession is something that's corrupted him in such a way that he is a raw nerve of a person. And I don't think I've ever seen Denzel do something like that.
Yeah, and one of the beautiful things about his performance is, especially when you see it in the entirety, the weight and the damage, really, and the guilt and a lot of things that he has on his shoulders for not solving a case before, and this is a similar case, so he's trying to solve this one. A lot of that is on his shoulders, and he's wearing it through the whole movie, and you don't see how impactful it is until you get near the end. And then it's like, oh my yep. God, that fed so many choices that were made that led to that moment.
Absolutely.
Now, what about Jared Leto?
Yeah, I was going to say, Jared Leto this is something that's different from I've ever seen him do before also, where he swung for the fences when it came to how much work he put into this role. It's a character that has nothing to do with anything else we've seen. It's a look of which is truly unique in its own. But and at once, you know, on one side, you can believe it to be a real, very real person who is capable of doing some dirty, disgusting things. But you can also believe he's not that at all. And is somebody who's just looking for some notoriety for something, or trying to take advantage of something. So it's easy to see both sides of the kind of character he's playing here and just how deep he goes into it. One thing that distracted me the most was he's got this very sunken, caved in face, but he's got like a beer gut on him too, which was weird.
That is weird.
Yeah, he blew me away. I mean, I've never really been a fan of Jared Leto. I'm not a fan of his acting techniques. I mean, the weird Joker stuff that he did to the cast. Whatever. But, I mean, he's obviously talented in some respects. I just don't usually find his performances that genuine. And it always feels like manufactured product to me. It feels like an actor acting. Watch me act. You know, it's the opposite of what Denzel does. Denzel lives in the moment, where Jared Leto always feels like he wants to make sure you know he's there in the moment. And those are two distinct differences. But here, I really feel like he just completely blended into this, and he kind of tackled and captured every single aspect of the character he needed to. He's even got a cool walk that changes how you perceive the character in some respects. And he says things so sly that it could totally have two different meanings to it, which is also impactful because he's a suspected serial killer. Does that mean he's saying he did something? Does that mean he's saying he had nothing to do with something? I mean, it's a very nuanced performance, and I was very impressed with what he did.
Are we talking Oscar contender here?
I mean, I don't want to talk in awards. I would put him in the conversation. I don't know if he would jump out as a leader.
Okay, now the other performance that I want to talk about is Rami Malek. So we have somebody who has won an Oscar before, but from everything I'm hearing, he's not overwhelming the audience with his performance here. So is that accurate to you both? Do you feel like he was a little underwhelming?
I think he's understated in his role. I mean, I'll be honest, between the other two, he doesn't capture the screen like the other two do. They just really kind of, I think he got smothered. He got overwhelmed by the surroundings. So not so much that he did anything wrong.
For me, what I noticed the most is that it felt like he was trying too hard.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, in the scenes and the thing that was interesting is like there, you know, when he's a cop, he's trying to pull off this intensity of a hunter and everything is just so angular and he's got this severe face on the entire time and he's just so trying to just be this character. But then when the first time you see him with his family or talking to his wife, he's somebody completely different. And I understand that. I don't know if that was a character choice or not, but being able to see that was a great transition. Mm-hmm. It's just that I wish he was more of that guy around his family through most of the movie, because he would have been a much better character than he was when he was the cop.
I agree with that. He was, I think when he's in Copland, he's trying a little too hard to come across as that, to come across as Brad Pitt in Seven, really. He's trying too hard to, and it's just not working for him. Now, when he is, like, as the movie goes on and things take a little bit of a turn, I really feel like he nailed those scenes, which was, you know, very important to the film. But it definitely, there's a lot in the early goings where I'm like, he should have been stronger, where Denzel just mops the floor with him, which is easy to do, to be fair. I mean, many actors
that's true.
Are left in the wake of Denzel Washington just by him walking in the room. And here he's slow, he's older, he's definitely put on quite a bit of weight, you know, and so he's not like the Denzel we're used to. And he still has more swagger in him than everybody else in the cast combined.
That's true.
Well, my final question for you guys, and this will probably be a quick answer from you both. Mm. John Lee Hancock is the writer and director. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the things that he's worked on before, just to give you some context, is The Blind Side, The Rookie, Saving Mr. Banks. At least for The Rookie and The Blind Side, these are films that have moments of happiness and fulfillment. Do you feel like you get that, or is this a completely different tone of film?
No.
No. So this is outside of his realm for the most part, but you enjoyed it.
The closest thing to a happy moment is the ending, and that even then, it's not that happy moment.
Yeah. I mean, I think...
This is very dark in tone.
A couple of them smiled a couple times. No, it's very Seven in tone. It's very Seven in tone.
Yeah.
So if the full price of admission were $10, what are you giving The Little Things,
Aaron? I give it $6.50.
I give it $7.50.
Okay.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. All right, so now we move on to Land, which is actually part of Sundance 2021, but it's also coming out to theaters on February 12th. A bereaved woman seeks out a new life off the grid in Wyoming. Now, it's directed and starring Robin Wright, as well as Kim Dickens and Demian Bashir. So this was a Sundance premiere. It's also coming to theaters, like I said. Essentially, Amanda, I saw it as a woman that was so traumatized from her own grief that she runs away to a remote cabin in order to teach herself to feel again. Is that how you saw it? And what did you think about the story?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is about her trying to run away from her problems in some respect, but I think she's internalized that so much that she isn't fully aware of it. More so on the surface of what she thinks she's doing is her trying to convince herself that she has a purpose for living, because the grief that she's enduring is so overwhelming and so powerful and drowning to her that she has to find reasons to continue going on. And so her going to this desolate location that very few would probably survive coming from a city life and city knowledge, no experience of surviving completely on your own. And I don't mean just like living alone. I mean, you have to chop your own wood so you can have warmth. You have to, you know, watch out for bears. You have to go pee in a bucket, basically, and you have to go through a windstorm or a snowstorm to get there. There's so many things that she has to go through just to survive her day to day. And it's about proving to herself, A, that she has a purpose for living, and B, that she can do this. She's trying to honor the people that were close to her and that she lost by showing her worth in another way, because she feels so worthless.
And Robin Wright, like I said, chose to direct and star in this. So what did you think of the performance, both hers and Demian Bashir?
So Robin Wright's performance was spectacular. She really knows how to bring you into emotion. She knows how to make you feel exactly what she's going through. As a woman who would not be able to survive these conditions whatsoever, has no idea what I'm doing, she had moments where I believed in her, and then other moments where I was like, how is she going to get through this? Because I was just along with her, sitting in her same emotion. And so much of it is about you living that experience with her and the tension of survival or defeat. And when it comes to Damian Bashir, his performance is really what ties it's the bow on top of the whole film. It's also the glue that binds everything together, because he is what comes in and honestly develops her character. For without him, she wouldn't progress as an individual in a story sense. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that it takes away from her as an actress, because 100% she can evolve and she can progress through her performance, as she showed here. But his character was so necessary to it. And as his own character progresses through the story, he was the one who brought me to literal tears. And that's where the emotion and the power was their relationship and the story about, and they really made me feel it through the way that they connected and their chemistry. That although you have to do things alone sometimes, you have to find yourself, you have to heal alone, it doesn't mean that you live your life alone in isolation. So many people, I think, when they experience trauma or sadness or heartbreak or whatever it is, think that the only way to heal is to be alone and do it alone. And yes, there is growth that happens there, but you need a support system. You need people that can help you along that journey. And that's really what humanity is about. And so they were the perfect combination. Their chemistry was mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I was really, I mean, I had no doubts on her going in. I didn't really know what his role was going to be. I thought he was going to be just like a savior or something. It ended up being a lot more than that. And he injected humanity. He definitely infused the film with a much needed pulse. Not that she didn't have one, but her character was so stoic and kind of reserved that he definitely helped expand that. So now in terms of direction, here's one thing I noticed. When I'm going to go, because I'm an avid outdoors person. I love to be outdoors and I go backpacking a lot. So a lot of the vistas and sweeping scenery, the landscapes, and exactly how that world is true to life, how it's actually visualized, I know because I've been out there. And I thought she did a wonderful job of capturing not just landscapes, but how it is to live in that world, how it is to survive in that world, because a lot of the things that she does is what I would normally do on a backpacking trip. So I'm used to a lot of it. And a lot of times I'm watching the film going, oh, don't do that. That's bad. That's a bad call.
Yeah.
But I really, really appreciated. I thought she did a wonderful job of directing and capturing those moments and those vistas. How did you feel in terms of a directing? Like when the movie was over, did you feel like she should do more of this? Or did you feel like, it's kind of a vanity project?
No, I mean, I definitely feel like she was talented and she knew the vision coming into it of what she wanted to achieve. She knew the steps that she wanted to take. And to your point, capturing not just the beauty of the landscape, but the treachery that's in it. She managed to gather that for us and put it into, you know, a very tension-filled way, where we felt concerned and we felt that anxiety the same that the character would. And so I appreciated that. I will say that I did not come away from this feeling like she had achieved a new mark in directing history or anything beyond. You know, I didn't feel like it was anything spectacularly new or invigorating. But I enjoyed it, and I thought she did a great job. Does that make sense? Because it's not to say that she wasn't great at directing. It was just nothing out of the norm,
nope.
I guess.
I get it. It wasn't like a Mel Gibson tackling Braveheart where you're like, holy crap, yeah. Martin Riggs did that? You know, it wasn't like that. It was a very good job. Mm-hmm. But she didn't, there was no stamps on there where I'm like, oh, okay.
Exactly. That's the right,
that's
yeah.
the mark. That's going to be her mark going forward. You know, I didn't see anything that stood out from anything I hadn't seen before in any other nature film, you know, Wild or something like that with Reese Witherspoon. So it's very much a very good film. I don't know if she did anything special. It just, yeah, she did a
and
very
I think
good job.
As we see more of her work, which I anticipate we will, because this is already being well received and, you know, we raved about it and it's coming to theaters and that'll get some more focus too. So as she does more work, maybe we'll see glimpses of what she identifies most with as a director, mm-hmm. and the things that she captures. But from a single debut, there was nothing significant that marked her as a director coming onto it.
So does this make
that doesn't mean she did a great job.
Yeah. Does this mean you want to go backpacking? Does this movie make you want to go backpacking and live outside?
Ooh, live outside? No. There was so much of it where I was like, whew, I did not. That seems like a lot of work. I did not think it was so much work to just survive day to day. And I guess it's beyond getting your own food and getting your own water, which is what I anticipated. It's so much about it. She is so remote and away from every facet of life, any potential chance of connecting with another human being, because she does this on purpose, that it's actually frightening. Like, it's terrifying. I felt so uncomfortable throughout the film because of that choice made. And I know it was intentional, but I would never want to be in her shoes where, you know, if you start to get low on food or something, who's going to come save you? The Ghostbusters aren't going to be there if you try to call, because you can't call nobody.
I don't know how they could help anyway. No, and they did a decent job of acknowledging, you know, how dangerous that is. There are so many little things they didn't even touch on. I mean, just like a simple paper cut could be a big deal out there if you don't, you know, if it gets infected or anything like that. A tick, they don't address a lot of things that are actually big concerns in the outdoors. But overall, I did a wonderful job. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Land?
I gave Land $8.
Samesies.
Yeah. Okay.
Now let's segue to Sundance. Now we've got a bunch of movies we're going to talk about, but we're going to do it like kind of a quick hit it and out. We're not going to spend as much time as we did on Land on it, just because, well, honestly, some of them don't deserve it. No, I'm just kidding. But before we get there, I got to ask you about this. Sundance 2021 went virtual. Means they didn't have the actual event in Park City, Utah. Utah. They didn't have this event this year live because obviously what's going on around us, that which shall not be named. And so they went virtual this year, which is what we're going to do South by Southwest at in March as well. You and I are covering that one. Now that you've had this experience, because you did it, you did this one as a patron though. Like you actually paid for this on your own and spent a good chunk of money to get certain films. Do you feel like this is going to be beneficial going forward? Like, did you enjoy watching films from your couch? Did you find that you were distracted a little more easily? Mm. Or that, you know, just overall thoughts on what the festival itself, how they're doing it?
So this is not a replacement for me for a film festival in person. There's just so much of it that is removed that makes a film festival special. Mm-hmm. And it's not just because you're watching the movie in person, which does have a significant impact, and you're forced to put your phone away. And that's usually when I'm at home, what I take notes on. Well, then it can be distracting just for that mere purpose. And it's a completely different environment when you're isolated in a room with a bunch of people who are all there with the same excitement, and then you hear an applause at the end, and you get to hear the thoughts and reactions of the rest of the audience with you, along with just the journey, like the physical journey it takes to get to a movie. It shows how invested you are in it. Sometimes that's not the same for an at home. However, I do know that this makes it more accessible to people who otherwise would not have an opportunity to go to a film festival because it is so expensive, not just for your tickets. It is expensive for tickets, but also just for travel. And you compound all of those things and it's just impossible. And that's the same thing for filmmakers. And so I think a virtual festival is a really great offering for people who can't physically attend in person. But it's not a replacement. And I hope that this festival creates lessons learned for other festivals going forward. There were a few hiccups that they needed to address, but I won't go into all that.
Could one of them be that you didn't get to watch Coda, the $25 million sale?
It could be. You know, the whole reason why I spent like a lot of money for one single day because of the way they advertised it. And then it was Not accurate. So anyway, I won't get onto that tangent because I'll stay on it for a while.
I don't think they're listening. We didn't do them as press, so we can say whatever we want.
Sure didn't.
Should have got that right, Sundance. I'm just saying. It just feels like a weird thing to do. And basically, if you wanted to know like how it worked, because we both watched several movies and she watched a lot more on her own, but there were basically, it's just like watching video on demand. I mean, that's really all it is. And you can Chromecast it to your TV or whatever. And it's definitely not the same as being to a festival, even if they have some of the same stuff. Like they have a Q&A, but it's like a Zoom call. So they do have some of the benefits of being at the festival, but you still, I mean, it's just...
Man, a Q&A like isn't the YouTube. Same without audience questions, though, in the it's interaction. And I imagine for filmmakers, it's not the same for them either, because part of the reason or part of the fantastic piece of it after launching and releasing a premiere of a film is having the immediate reception of the audience in front of you, engaging what questions they have, what their thoughts were, versus reading it all a few hours later on the internet in a bunch of reviews. So it's just very different. And the process at which you secure your seat is, it can be very confusing.
I just don't understand, like, why is there a limit? It's digital. Why is there a limit? How does anything sell out digitally? I just don't understand the concept there. And I get the limitation of seats,
but what I don't understand... The thing that bothers me the most
is... And apparently you're not going to let me talk. You're just going to cut me off so you can go back in your monologue.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to say, I don't understand that. It doesn't make any sense to me at all because it's digital. So a billion people could watch it as long as they all have bandwidth. I don't understand the point. Now, I get you want to limit it because then it makes it more exclusive. It makes it more of a selling tool, whatever. But I would think the benefit, like if you're trying to... publicly have a digital festival, you would want as many people as possible to see it. And it just feels weird to me that you would limit it.
The thing that was weird for me about their restrictions and limitations is not that they had a total quantity, but that because so they have like day passes, they have specific one purchase single pass for a specific movie. They have the press passes, all of these. They don't take a total. They just say, here's our allocation for this type of pass, this type of pass, this type of pass. And you can't reserve your seat, even if there's one open, if it's after the start of the festival. So even if there's an open seat and there's an allocation within your pass, you're past the time to secure it. It's just bizarre to me. Like you're limiting the film's opportunity for exposure by doing that. So
I would agree.
I don't know.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about some of these movies. And like I said, we're going to run through them fairly quickly because otherwise, as you heard, Amanda will be here for 3 hours.
Yeah.
John will be in a coma at some point.
John's already almost there.
I think so. All right. So I'm going to kind of go through them and you just give me your quick points of what you thought overall quickly. John in the Hole. It's a coming-of-age psychological thriller that plays out the unsettling reality of a kid who holds his family captive in a hole in the ground. And it's directed by Pascal Sisto, and it was starring Charlie Shotwell, Michael C. Hall, and Jennifer Uhl. I would say we both saw this one, and it has a very dreamlike, abstract nature, but it's really about a child who wants to know what it's like to be an adult and does some really sick things to get there. And his family's coming to try to understand that. So it was overall enjoyable, just weird.
It was weird. It was a very indie artsy film for sure. But I enjoyed it a lot, particularly because of how it kept me intrigued despite it being such a simple premise.
Very simple.
You know what I mean? There's not a lot to it if you really break it down, but I was engaged the whole time and there were moments of tension and there were really great parts. There is one very weird scene moment thing that the two of us could really just like, what the heck? does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, there's basically like three scenes that aren't even connected to the movie. So it's like,
It's got to be a parable.
It's got to be a parable. Yeah, it's got to be a parable. And you have to figure it out yourself. It's one of those. You figure it out. It's so artsy.
Yeah.
And those can be, wow, that's fascinating and riveting. Or it can be, what? So I'm more in the what category and she's more in the, all right, that's interesting. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give John on the whole?
I give it $6.50.
I give it $5.50 because there's three scenes.
Those moments, I knew they were going to impact your decision a lot.
Didn't like them. Yeah. I don't like when you think you're smarter than everybody watching your movie, and you probably are, but that doesn't mean I like it anymore. Sorry, I just don't. But I did really dig the whole it's a coming of age because coming of age tales are all the rage at Sundance every year. They always are. But to put it in that perspective of it's a coming of age tale about a kid leaving innocence and adolescence to kind of look at adulthood by putting his family in a bunker in a ground and, you know, basically just making them suffer for however long they're in there. That was fascinating.
Yeah.
That's where you do it. It's much better than a summer camp. All right. Next is Mass, which the aftermath of a violent tragedy that affects the lives of two couples in two different ways. And it stars Jason Isaacs, Martha Plimpton, and Ann Dowd. What's the violent tragedy?
Oh, my goodness. So essentially, you have two couples who are meeting at a church room. And the majority, and when I say the majority, I mean almost the entire film takes place within these four walls. And it's these two couples who are coming together to have a conversation about a school shooting tragedy that occurred where one couple's child murdered the other couple's child. Oh, wow. It is a very, very unsettling and deeply impactful film. But more than anything, because the content is, you know, the conversation, it's almost entirely dialogue. There is not much else that's happening.
Well, most conversations are, really, when you think about it.
But I mean, they don't do much of anything else. You don't really have breaks from it.
Like jazz
hands? They move around the room a little bit, and that's about it. However, the performances in here were so real and raw and individual. They all had very unique identities, and I was very emotional throughout it. I connected with it deeply, even though, you know, I've never been in that situation or had family in that situation, even just hearing of tragedies like that. And hearing these two families try, their goal basically is to try to find closure and understand why, what happened with your child that led him to this point where he shot and killed a bunch of students, including my child. And how the story unravels is fascinating and extremely well done.
All right. So $10 full price of admission. What do you give Mass?
I gave Mass $6.
Okay.
And I will say Martha Plimpton is an absolute standout in the film.
Well, I mean, she was in Goonies too, right? So in Superior, it's about Marion. She's on the run and she returns to her hometown to hide out with her identical twin sister, Vivian, and in doing so, alters the trajectory of both of their lives. I will let you know right now, I hate twin stories because it feels like, oh, look, we're going to dupe you somewhere in the movie and you're going to think this character's a different character. Ha ha, we got you. It's always that way. So is it?
That's not this way.
Thank God. It stars Alessandra Mesa, Annie Mesa. Well, so it does have twins in there.
It literal actual twins, yes.
Excellent. Pico Alexander is directed by Aaron Vassilopoulos. So what did you think overall of Superior?
You know, I could appreciate the performances. There were some really good moments in the film. Overall, it was pretty average just because of the story. I didn't feel like it was...
Is it a horror movie then or drama? Enough.
It's more of like a drama and thriller at times. Like it tries to inject that because you basically have one twin who's come back and reconnected with the other after 6 years, and she's obviously running away from something or someone, and they agree to take each other's place for a little bit throughout their lives. And it gets very weird. Like one of them's married and the husband thinks it's his wife and it's not. Mm. And it's weird. Yeah.
All right. That sounds all right.
The story is really about them basically switching places as they try to run away from their own problems of their life. And they find that it's really not better on the other side. And that's really what the whole movie is. So it was okay.
Mm. Blistering okay.
I mean, I would watch it, but I wouldn't tell you to like spend a bunch of money on it.
So what do you give the score? I have $10 full price permission.
$5.
All right. That's pretty average. Mm-hmm. How it ends. On the last day on Earth, one woman goes on a journey through LA to make it to her last party before the world ends, running into an eclectic cast of characters along the way. Stars Zoe Lister-Jones and Daryl Ween, also directed with Zoe Lister-Jones. And also it stars Kaylee Spaney, Whitney Cummings, Olivia Wilde. This is that one where you said that there's a lot of actors that do cameos as this list of characters. Did you enjoy this one? It feels like a really weird Seth Rogen-y kind of film.
It's very weird. It doesn't have the type of Seth Rogen humor, that's for sure.
No
that
weed.
You're yeah, no, none of that. But it is a nice coming of age tale. It's basically about you reconnecting and loving yourself. And basically, what would you do on your last day on Earth? Like, if you know, everyone knows the world is going to end today, what are you going to spend that day doing? And she has an actual metaphysical younger self alongside her throughout the movie. And for whatever reason, everybody can see her today. So the younger self finally feels actually seen, which is her just kind of working through some of that internal childhood drama she had stuck inside. I liked it a lot. And I'm sure people will love the celebrity cameos because there are lots of them. If you look at who they are, you've got like Finn Wolfhard, Nick Kroll, you've got Bradley Whitford, Olivia Wilde, you mentioned Logan Marshall Green. It's all over the place. Like the guy from Upgrade is in here. Why? I don't know. But they don't really serve a real purpose to me. I felt like it was just to name drop celebrities and B-list celebrities at that.
Yeah, let's just say celebrities. Wannabe celebrities. They thought they were. They're going to end up on a reality show at some point.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun. I liked the movie. I laughed. It was weird. It was enjoyable. But that's the part that really actually drug it down for me is these random, never-ending celebrity pop-ups. And they don't play themselves. They're just celebrities injected playing normal people.
All right. So what do you give How It Ends?
I gave it $6.
So you enjoyed that one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Mayday, we both saw, but I think I saw more of it. So you were,
I fell asleep.
Yeah, you were movied out, I think, is what I heard. So it's about Anna. She's transported to a dreamlike and dangerous land where she joins an army of girls engaged in a never-ending war along a rugged coast. Though she finds strength in this exhilarating world, she comes to realize that she's not the killer they want her to be. It's directed by Karen Sonora, and it stars Grace Van Patten, Mia Goth, and Havana Rose Liu. I will tell you, in terms of the performances, Mia Goth as basically number two in the cast is wonderful. She's just
absolutely
like a riveting supporting character and just fascinating to watch. Grace Van Patten as Anna, she was a good actress. Like, she didn't do anything wrong. I just don't know if she blew me away or anything. And the whole movie, you know, it's meant to be a dream. And you know it's going to connect in the end. And it kind of does, and it also really doesn't. So it's weird because I enjoyed watching the women go about and kind of live this crazy life where they're four women living in a U-boat after a war. And they're basically taking out random men whenever they can. And you can tell that there's a lot more at play because they start getting very similar distress signals. They've got a lot of things that come up that are coincidental that aren't really coincidental. They're just more, you got to pay attention to the details. But I just don't think it all clicks when the whole thing is done. So I would say it's something to watch, especially if you like really engaging, kind of like fantasy-ish worlds, almost like Sucker Punch without the budget. And, you know, if you're into that, I think you should at least give it a try and see if maybe it really sticks in your head and really makes you feel something. It didn't work overall for me, but I still didn't dislike the movie. I was engaged for most of it. So if $10 is the price of admission, I would give that one $5. I think it's worth a watch to make up your own mind. That said, I wouldn't watch it again. All right. So the last one that we're going to talk about is Prisoners of the Ghostland. Now, this one is fascinating to me because it's about a notorious criminal who must break an evil curse in order to rescue an abducted girl who has mysteriously disappeared. It is starring
Aaron
Nicolas Cage as Hero, that's his name, Sofia Boutella, and Nick Cassavetes is the Psycho, that's his name. Now, I read a bunch of reviews that raved about this movie.
It
said,
oh my God,
it's so much fun. And all I heard from Amanda.
You have my attention now.
We have John Beck. This seems full Nick Cage territory. Like, this is Nick Cage really needing to pay those tax payments. So I want to know why you think a lot of people raved about this movie and how crazy it is, and you were not a fan.
Okay, so I'm going to start with what really works for it. The cinematography in this film is exceptional. I mean, truly is wonderful. There are moments, and I don't mean throughout the entire film, but there are moments where it reminded me of Mad Max in terms of how beautiful the cinematography was and how well they captured some of these moments. However, the story, the plot, the Nick Cage is so ridiculous and stupid to me. I mean, I laughed. It's one of those movies where it's so perplexingly dumb that I'm gonna stay with it because of that and in spite of it. But it doesn't mean it's a good movie. I would not rave about this. I would rave about the cinematography. Nick Cage is definitely Nick Cagey, but he's not face off Nick Cage. So he's not all over. In the description, they literally said this is Nick Cage basically being his cagiest self. That's not true. Don't get your hopes up. However, he's ridiculous. And he has explosives attached to various parts of his body, including his nuts. So
John's really on board now at this point.
It is weird.
No one needs nuts.
Well, not him either. So it's weird, but it's also like it just doesn't make sense. How do we have samurai? It's supposed to be set in Japan because you have the backdrop is completely that. And somehow you have like Western white dude leaders, but you also have cowboys and like ninjas and samurais. And it's like, how many things are we going to merge in here just to see if we can do it? And that's what it felt like. It felt like one of those movies where it's like, let's just see how ridiculous we can get. And let's go for it because we have Nick Cage. If they didn't have Nick Cage, nobody would be raving about this movie.
Okay. Well, what do you give this one? If $10 full price admission, what do you give this one? Because I got to tell you, the whole explosives on parts of your body, including the nuts, I'm kind of like, I got to see that. I don't know why. I just want to.
I'm not telling you not to see it. I think just for the purposes of how weird how weird the movie is, you should watch it.
Is it better than Mandy?
Yes, okay. It is.
All right.
It is. That works. It is. It makes sense. The story, I guess it makes sense. It's just really dumb. It truly is. They just try to merge so many genres, I feel like, or types of characters, where I'm like, so we're in a Western? Oh, no, we're in a Japanese film. Okay, so we're speaking Japanese? Oh, we're speaking English now. Now the Japanese women are like they have very strong accents, but they're just going to talk English.
I love this. What are you talking about? It sounds fantastic.
It's ridiculous. That they open
amazing.
With arguably one of, I don't want to say anything about what happens, but the first 5 minutes, you'll at least appreciate. Because if you love movies that really try to push the grounds of what an audience will accept filmmakers to do or like characters in a movie to do, they certainly do that.
All right. If $10 full price of admission, what do you give Prisoners of the Ghostland?
I'm going to give it $4.
All right. And that's Sundance, people. We are out of that one. Now we're going to go to our From the Outside In topic. Okay, this is really simple. Like, because we knew Sundance was going to take a big portion of the time, we picked the easiest freaking topic we could ever pick. Literally one question. It's still going to be a conversation, though. But we're going to start
It's going to be a very short one.
Yeah, we're going to start with John, because I think you held the floor there for a little bit. John, do you re...
Aaron, what's up, buddy?
I was just making sure you were still... Yeah, had a pulse going. You're good. You're caffeinated.
Oh, I just get my second wind in now.
Do you rewatch movies anymore? Or do you feel like because of the constant new media has almost killed that completely, you don't do it as much?
You're going to kill me when I say this, but I watch stuff that I watched before almost all the time. And the reason why for me, I do that now.
Almost
is that
all the time. There's like tons of new stuff. Why? You know what? The reason you were going to tell me and I just cut you off.
You know, I can tell you these things or you can give me a hard time and berate me for it.
I'll wait for that.
When it comes to watching something new, I get to start feeling a little bit of anxiety. I'm like, I gotta write a contract with this thing I'm about to watch. Am I gonna sit down and watch it and be able to enjoy it, or am I going to, you know, have something in the back of my mind that's gonna bother me, or is something else gonna skew my view of whatever it is I'm about to sit down and watch? Whereas when I watch something like, I just recently, of course I did, because the, you know, Godzilla trailer came out. I just recently watched all the recent Godzilla movies, and including Kong. And I sat down and I had a great time watching them. And I was able to say, you know, have this internal monologue in my head about how great those movies are and how great it made me feel to watch it. And I didn't get caught up in any sort of anxiety of my life. Whereas a new movie has a higher chance of just inciting more anxiety.
I don't understand why new content would incite more anxiety. Is it because you have a level of comfort? You don't have to pay attention. You don't have to finish something if you don't like it because you've already seen it or you get tired of it. Is that what you mean?
Well, I don't like to say that I don't have to pay attention, because I do pay attention. I do sit there and I watch the moments as they come, and I try to relive the excitement of initially watching it. Like I did the of course, that's what that sentence means, but... But like when I watch something new, it's like, am I going to like this? Is it going to make me happy? Mm. Is the time I'm about to spend on this going to be something that I regret? Is it not? It just kind of unfolds into a whole twisted nightmare of like, what's going to happen next?
All right. Well, you know, I really struggle with this one, because I grew up rewatching movies constantly. I remember when Indiana Jones came out, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And my mom got it for me for Christmas and put it under the tree. And I had almost surgeon-like precision with unwrapping that present. So I could take it out, and when she wasn't home, I'd watch that movie over and over and over again. Then I put
Sounds like she didn't use enough tape.
She had a lot of tape. I'm just that good. And then I would put it back under the tree. And then when she left again, I would take it out. Like, I'd rewatched it maybe 20 times before Christmas even hit. And then just, you know, wore the tape out as the years went on. I really love rewatching movies growing up. And I think it's probably just the last five years. I don't know where all the money's coming from, because there's so much new content. It just boggles my mind, because I know that stuff ain't cheap. But there's so much new stuff. I hardly ever watch movies. I used to buy movies all the time, and I would rewatch them at least a couple times a year, every couple of years. Now, if I buy something, if I watch it one more time, it's a good day. It's rare, you know? So I think I'm overwhelmed by new content in terms of that.
On the subject of buying stuff, I find that I buy a lot less movies now than I used to ever buy before.
Yeah, me too. A lot less. Tons less.
It like has to cross the line of like, I know I'm going to sit down and rewatch this at some point, and I know I'm going to really enjoy it. So it has to be something I absolutely adore and love for me to decide I want to buy it.
I tend to rewatch TV more than I do movies. I don't know why. It could just be because I'm typically more drawn to television anyway, but movies, I have a harder time saying, oh, I want to rewatch this. It's like I'll be in the mood for something old that I wanted to rewatch that I've seen 100 times before. So I'll put it on as like background noise sort of thing. And lately, a lot of Schitt's Creek is like, put it on while, you know, something's happening, like while you're making dinner or whatever. But I just do not lean towards rewatching movies very much ever anymore.
What I find fascinating is, because I don't buy new movies anymore, or not very often. I mean, usually now I'll wait until Christmas, where I used to get them. I got to get it the day it comes out. You know, I was looking at Freaky was coming out. I'm like, I really want to watch that one again. And I'm like, I could probably wait until Christmas. It'll be $5. And then I probably still won't even want to watch it by that point. What I found fascinating is where I used to be. And I don't know if you guys are the same way, but I used to be where I had to buy every movie that I really liked. And I would have, hundreds of, first it was videotapes, then it became DVDs, then it became Blu-rays, and now 4K comes in the mix if I think it's really visually appealing. But now I'm to the point where I don't do that unless it's a huge movie that I love, or it's part of something specific. Like I have all the Marvel films, all the DC, all Tarantino, stuff like that.
Right.
You know, I don't do it as much anymore, because I don't really feel like I'm going to watch them. And I used to be so against ever buying anything digital. Now, if I can get digital for $5 versus paying 10 or 15 for the hard copy, I'm not too worried about it. I used to be like, well, I'll never be able to watch it if I want to. Yeah, but really, what are the odds of me watching it anyway?
So when every year when it comes down to Christmas time, you know how you do. You guys go out, you make your Christmas list and your Amazon wish list, and you put stuff on there. And I've got expensive taste. And if I don't put movies on my list, I know I ain't getting shit from nobody.
Maybe that's a you problem.
It is a me problem.
Maybe you should be a little less fancy, is what I'm saying.
I'm just saying that I have to put movies or save my movies up for Christmas to be able to be like, okay, I know that you guys aren't going to get me the $500 camera or this other thing or this other stuff that I plan on doing something with. So here's a whole bunch of movies that I love. You guys can buy me that.
So you'd rather they waste money and you know you're never going to watch it?
No, I do rewatch the movies.
Okay. Just checking, because I think I've sent you one before. So I want to make sure that like this wasn't some kind of really crappy thing you do.
Didn't we start the show off with me saying, or this part of the segment off with me saying that I constantly rewatch stuff?
He did say that.
I'm just clarifying. I just want to make sure, because you're like, oh, I tell him a bunch of stuff I didn't really want. I really wanted this $500 drone.
I never said it was a bunch of stuff I really didn't want. I said it's a bunch of stuff that is cost effective for people who don't like me enough to spend the kind of money on me as
or
some
just
of the
don't
other
have
stuff that
money.
No, I'm gonna go with don't like me enough.
People that don't like me enough. What a way to spit it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to save you money because you don't appreciate me.
When I do decide to buy something, I don't typically lend to buying just digital. And because it's become so much more rare, I typically try to find it in the metal case. Oh my God, now I can't even think of the words. Steel box. Steel, is that right? Steel case?
Oh, yeah, steel box is accurate.
Like, where are my words today? Those, that thing. Yeah.
Just
because I love
the collectible
them. I appreciate
cases
them.
Like at Best Buy and stuff like that.
Yeah, Best Buy. Walmart apparently has a bunch. Like, there were some really cool John Wick ones that I got, and they're Walmart exclusive. So
you do buy some.
I do, yeah. I honestly feel like at this point, I think I might finally be leveling out with you on my purchases. I do them all at one time, though. And it sounds like you've kind of gotten to that point, too. But I know you used to buy
a ton,
pretty much everything.
Yeah. Well, and part of that is with age, too. I mean, the older you get, you're like, why do I want a bunch of stuff that my family's going to have to figure out what to do with when I'm dead? And it's just, I mean, because
that's real dark.
Well, you got to, I mean, just realistic. I've got boxes of videotapes, Amanda. I've got a giant box of VHS tapes in my basement.
Are they porn?
No.
Or are they actual movies?
There is one Pamela Anderson Playboy video that I'm still willing to watch before she had the work done. You know what I'm saying? But I've got this huge box of stuff or videotapes. I'm never going to watch those. I don't have a VCR anymore. And if I might have one. I don't know if it works. So what a waste. What an absolute waste of money that was. And even though it probably gave me, you know, a lot of happiness, especially that videotape with Pamela Anderson. But outside of that, I mean, I don't really know why I spent all that money. So I'm trying to cut back on stuff like that. Like, I just feel like it's unnecessary. And with streaming, and most of the movies I want to watch are on streaming platforms somewhere, it's pretty handy. Now, the only thing that I would say is there's a lot of older movies like classics that are not on streaming networks that I do still buy if I come across them, just because I would like to have a copy of them and I don't find them on digital anywhere.
Yeah, that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that prompts me to purchase movies these days is when I'm trying to find something on streaming, like I really want to watch it and I can't find it unless I have to add another network to my catalog of streaming services. And I'm like, why would I pay for the streaming service to watch this movie or to rent it because I really want to watch it for $4 when I could just go on Amazon and buy it for $6 because it's older? You know what I mean? So that's when I'm prompted more than anything to just impromptu buy a film.
What do you guys think is the movie in the past 2 years, let's say 2 years, that you've watched the most, rewatched?
Rewatched probably Greatest Showman.
You ever watched on sing-along?
Yes, of course. Absolutely. What kind of question is that? Yeah.
I don't have the memory for those words. Jen, what about you? Godzilla?
I'm working on that. I'm thinking, like, it would be easy for me to say Kong Island, but I don't know if that's right or not.
It used to be Boondock Saints. But I really, really got into Greatest Showman. And I think that between that and La La Land, because I think they came out the same year, didn't they? Or were they?
Possibly. I honestly, I can't remember off the top of my head.
Still probably Greatest Showman.
Wow.
You know, I have to say it's probably still She's Out of My League.
Mm.
You still rewatch that a lot, huh?
I still rewatch that one a lot.
He's still counting his blessings in his own life.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing.
I'm just kidding.
That's exactly what I'm doing. Oh, see, that's my life story right there. I'm the one on the left, aren't I? Anyways. But I don't know. There's just something about that movie that makes me happy. And I think it has a lot to do with the friendships in that movie. Like Stainer being the kind of friend he was, where he was, you know, he was kind of a drag of a friend who's giving the main character, Jay Baruchel's character, like the wrong idea about everything. And then when he has the realization of just how great everyone is and how he had it all wrong this entire time and was like so incited by the love for his friend to go and be like, hey, you can do this. And then he went so far for his friend. Like, I've never had anything like that happen for mm-hmm. me. And so I get really jealous. That's really what I'm saying.
Wow. That's such an old movie to be rewatching constantly, but whatever you're into, man. I'd probably go John Wick, any of the John Wicks, really. Like I
rewatch them that much?
The first one I probably rewatched. I mean, I don't rewatch many movies right now, though. So that's a big factor. Keep in mind.
Hateful Eight, I feel like you watch a lot, though.
I watch it every Christmas because it's a Christmas movie. There's snow. Yeah. It would be either Hateful Eight or John Wick 1. I don't know why. I really love that first one. It's probably the puppy.
Aw, the puppy. Which part? When it gets splat or the second puppy?
No, after he gets killed. And then he goes just ballistic. See, that's when the movie like picks up and it's like, ah, just so fantastic.
Right.
But I don't, outside of that, I would say probably Greatest Showman's up there too. I mean, I just think that's a movie. God, when it first came out, I must rewatch it 5 or 6 times in a row. Just back to back to back. It's just one of those movies where that's great background noise. Just great background noise. And as soon as you're walking through the room, if you're trying to do something like clean the house or whatever, and you got Greatest Showman on, you start doing a little spin. Trying to pretend like a Hugh Jackman, realize your hips don't work that way. It's very disappointing.
I still haven't watched that one because I'm to a point where everyone loves that movie so much, I'm convinced I'm going to hate it.
There's something wrong with you. If that's for you, this movie is sheer joy from start to finish. Sheer joy. Sheer joy.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Rebecca Ferguson in it. You love her.
I do love her.
All right.
She's great.
Well, here's where our listener poll. Are you ready for what our listener said?
Absolutely. I can't wait to hear what this
we is. Asked
is this in terms of how often or what movies?
How often.
Okay.
So we asked them, do you rewatch movies anymore? And if you do, how often? 40% said all the time. They rewatch movies all the time. 30%, sorry, they said none of the time. Never. And then it was pretty evenly split between rarely and once a month. So you've got, 40% say they do it all the time and then 30% saying they don't do it. Which I find fascinating.
Most of them are my people.
True, I guess. It's obvious that some people only want to watch new stuff and other people just want the comfort food.
It is comfort. That's what it is. I think if you're referring to, especially if we're restricting it to like the last couple of years, a whole year almost now has been spent in isolation where we needed stuff that made us feel good. And although we watched a lot of new stuff, I think for those of us that were in need of a bit more comfort, we relied on rewatching things a lot.
But I've rewatched less stuff during COVID than I ever have. Like,
man, it's opposite for me. I even the thing that I've rewatched the most in just this last year, which is Schitt's Creek, is a show I found this year. But I've watched the show so much.
Yes,
more than I've watched anything in the last few years. Sometimes just because
when we're talking to you and you're like, ew, or you start doing some little boop thing.
Ew, David.
Yeah, just like, easy, Amanda, you're not the actual character. It's okay. Boop.
You don't know my life.
Boop.
Num-nums for us, David.
Oh, my God. I don't remember. There's a time recently when I was talking. We were doing a podcast and you said num nums and I was like, I was about to just disconnect you. I'm like, no, we just can't live like this. Time to move on. Time to move on. All right. For us, it is time to move on to our upcoming releases and recommendations. So, guys, what is coming out in the next couple weeks?
All right. Up first, we have More Than Miyagi, the Pat Morita story. Yeah, it's all about Pat Morita. It has a whole bunch of people from the different TV shows and movies he's worked on. It's directed by Kevin Derrick and is written by Oscar Olivez and Kevin Derrick.
Coming out on February 12th to VOD is Fear of Rain. A girl living with schizophrenia struggles with terrifying hallucinations as she begins to suspect her neighbor has kidnapped a child. The only person who believes her is Caleb, a boy she isn't even sure exists.
What?
Will it beat words on bathroom walls? We'll see.
Following that is this absolutely amazing looking movie.
This looks so ridiculously awesome.
The title, though. The title.
Willy's Wonderland on VOD February 12th. A quiet drifter is tricked into a janitorial job at the now condemned Wally's Wonderland.
Willy's.
I copy and pasted this directly from IMDb. Oh.
Well, it's Willy's Wonderland. That's the name of the movie.
Yeah, it's actually called Willy's Wonderland.
All right. Well, anyhow, my IMDb screwed me up there. The mundane task suddenly becomes an all-out fight for survival against a wave after wave of demonic animatronics. First fists fly, kicks land, and titans clash. Only one side will make it out alive. All you need to know is that this stars the man himself, Nicolas Cage.
Oh, my God. Only he would star in a film called Willy Wonderland.
Isn't it like a game?
It's like One Night at Charlie's or something like that.
I must be a child because I don't think about a game.
Right.
There's a game like this.
It's a new game.
Yeah, it's a newer game. I don't know much about it. I think it's One Night at Freddy's or something like that.
Yeah, One Night at Freddy's. Yeah. At this point, I'm just going to say that if I ever need to describe my day to anyone, I'm just going to put every single Nicolas Cage movie on a giant wheel.
Find the right
and just
clip.
Be like... it's Wicker Man today. That's what my day is like.
I actually
the
like
bees.
No. I'm punching old ladies and getting stung by bees.
Just seems fantastic.
So the last one coming out on February 12th is Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. Lifelong friends Barb and Star embark on the adventure of a lifetime when they decide to leave their small Midwestern town for the first time ever.
I wish they'd keep going with this trailer.
Yes. Like, I like Kristen Wiig and everything, but I just don't know if I have it in me to watch this.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't. I 100% don't. I'll probably give it a whirl, but I'm not. I'll tell you what, this is going to be one of those $20 in-home theater releases. Nope. You ain't getting 20 out of me for that. Not with that trailer. I'm Barb and I'm Star. My name is Barb Star or some nonsense. I'm like, what? What? I don't know what the hell's going on. They're trying too hard to be quirky or weird. And a good friend of mine told me that his son, Bennett, is having a real conundrum trying to figure out why I'm in YouTube. So, hi, Bennett. How you doing? Boop.
Did you just boop a child through YouTube?
Am I going to get in a list or something? I don't know what the rules are.
You might.
I don't think so. I don't think it works like that. All right, any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about, John?
Yeah, you know what? I spent the part of my weekend rewatching bits and pieces of The OA, which is a show that's now canceled on Netflix. Mm. But it's something that I really loved. And speaking of rewatching something, if you have time and you want to watch something that's completely new and different and may blow your mind a little bit here and there, and maybe at points feels like it's trying a little hard, but if you just let it take over, it's a really quite a great and fun ride. So, yeah.
Does it have a conclusion?
Technically, no.
Well, that's important to tell people before. Ouch. You're like, hey, guys, go check out this show. It's going to blow your mind. What? So it's got a great ending? No, your mind's going to be blown because there isn't one.
Yeah. Well,
thanks,
there is
Netflix.
An ending. And there's sort of like it's sort of like you can write your own ending after
that.
Oh,
that's my favorite. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I like. That's what I like to hear. I will recommend, I saw News of the World with Tom Hanks in theaters. It's also on video on demand, so you can rent it at home. And it's a very good film. It's Tom Hanks being so Hanksy. as he's a man that basically it's after the Civil War and he's going town to town reading the news to people that can't get the news otherwise. And he comes across this young girl who had been basically abducted by Indians. And so she doesn't speak English and he takes her in and tries to get her to her family across the plain. And it's just the different things that they come across. And Paul Greengrass, who did the Bourne films, directed it. But he doesn't direct like he normally directs those movies. I mean, there's actual static shots and there's no, it's not all hand camera. I mean, it's not, doesn't give you a headache when it's all said and done. He's a very well directed film. And Tom Hanks, of course, is awesome. Also, you know, one that's been recommended to me a lot is the show called Ted Lasso, which stars Mr. Olivia Wilde, Jason Sudeikis, and he's...
Ouch.
he is basically a coach from the States who's brought over to the UK to coach a soccer team. And the whole point is the owner of the team is coming off a nasty divorce, and she wants to punish her husband because she got the football team, and he loves the team. So she wants to punish him by making the team fail. So she basically hires the least likely candidate possible for this very Ivy League team. And the thing is that Jason Sudeikis is Ted Lasso with his mustache, which is very 70s. I'm working on getting a job in the industry kind of mustache. He's so positive and upbeat and just infectiously so, where the show started and I thought I'm going to hate this guy because I can only take this so long. I mean, I can only take this. It's going to just get exhausting. It's not going to feel real or genuine as it goes. But by God, Jason Sudeikis does it. He pulls it off. He makes it work. And it's an Apple TV Plus show. Never would have watched it. But thank you, John, for giving me the password. Appreciate you.
You're welcome.
And it's a very heartwarming, funny show. I wouldn't put it as like, it wouldn't have made my top 10 of last year. I don't find it as funny as Schitt's Creek, but it's up there. I mean, it's a very good show. And I normally don't like sitcoms, or it's not really a sitcom. It's more like a dramedy. But there's some really great moments as it goes. And as it gets toward the first or second half of the first season, really some good emotional beats as well. And some character growth. So yeah, Ted Lasso on Apple TV Plus. Check it out. Amanda?
Wow, you almost talked as long as I usually do. That was crazy.
I don't think I did. I don't think I did.
I'm going to recommend Justified, which I've been watching, and I don't think I've mentioned it. It's the only other thing I've had time for aside from Sundance movies. And I'm normally not a Western-ish type of movie TV show watcher at all. But really, it's not very Western-y. I was under the impression it would be much more Western than it is. And Timothy Oliphant, I kind of want to watch him in absolutely everything right now. Mm. Just think he's so fantastic and he is perfect in this role. And
you got to say his name right.
How do you say it?
It's Timothy off with his pants.
I actually think he looks a little bit like Aaron, so that'd be weird.
Depends on the
younger
day.
Aaron, not Aaron now. Aaron now is a little bit aged.
Wow, that's... very
like cheese in a good way, or maybe that's wine.
I'm glad you're enjoying it and making this weird as hell.
It is fantastic. If you have not seen it, I would go watch it immediately if I were you, because I am doing that.
And John, you get our weekly streaming recommendation, and it's got to be from HBO Max, which I think is your favorite service ever. So what is the recommendation?
So I went Robot Chicken. If you don't know what this is, Seth Green and his cohorts and a whole bunch of voice actors that you know very well got together and decided to animate old toys. And they animated the old toys and told these stories with characters like Superman and Batman and Spider-Man and all this stuff. And it's just these weird, crazy, like off-the-wall story, like skits they pull off with these characters, and I just sat there and mindlessly watched these things and had a great time. So yeah,
Robot Chicken. All right, well, you can share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter at Buy Popcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. If you're listening to my podcast, that would be greatly appreciated. Or subscribe on YouTube. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at RJohnDraws. Amanda's on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk and at Sink Into This on Twitter. And me on the Blacklist Exposed, which is going to be on forever. And Presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks on Twitter. Now, we got one more thing before we leave. It's this game, segment, whatever, called I Can't Believe We Thought That Was Cool. Now, that's where a host mentions a favorite film from their youth that now contains material that makes them very uncomfortable or is hilarious in hindsight. And it's my turn. So the movie is Real Genius. Who here's seen it? John, I know you've seen it.
Yeah. Maybe?
I've seen it.
Okay. So we've all seen the comedy classic from 1985, Real Genius. Val Kilmer's Chris Knight. He does this thing in the movie. Now, he does a ton of hilarious but very questionable things, though he still can't hammer a 6-inch spike through a board with his penis. But at one point, he uses liquid nitrogen to get snacks and coffee out of a vending machine. You guys remember that?
Yep.
Okay, at the time, when I was a kid, I thought that was like the coolest thing ever, and I totally wanted to try it. I didn't understand why we wouldn't want to do something like that. I can get free snacks. I get this liquid nitrogen in a tube, and I get free snacks. This is amazing. Until later, much later, like now, when I realized exactly how dangerous liquid nitrogen actually is, and it can cause instant frostbite, plus just breathing it can damage your lungs immediately. So it's absolutely idiotic. And I'm kind of ashamed that I really wanted to try it. I actively searched for liquid nitrogen at one point. We didn't have Google.
I don't think you're alone, because there were a lot of people who were like, no, this can't be real. That's not real. No, it was definitely, that was not an error in the script.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it would probably maybe work that way. I don't know, but I do know it's very toxic and very bad, and it's not cool.
Well, it's the 80s, you know, toxicity wasn't a thing back then.
Yeah, but when they say
everything was bad, but it was okay back then.
True, but when right. they say, well, kids see stuff on TV, they'd never try to do that. I mean, they're smarter than that. They are not. I tried to find liquid nitrogen.
They are dumb. And now there's Amazon, so don't let your children watch this or else.
Yes,
exactly. They're yeah, going I was to say, ask I'm pretty Alexa. Sure.
I'm pretty sure that you can just get it off of Amazon these days. It would be so much easier than it was in the 80s.
Oh, God. Maybe that's why Bezos is leaving the board, huh? Or leaving the job.
Leaving his CEO title. That,
or he's got to hunt down Superman.
He does look like Lex Luthor. He does. That's great.
That's actually funny. Yes, he does.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for our episode this week. Remember, the next time you head to a theater or sit comfortably on your couch waiting for one to open, because they're not all there yet, buy popcorn.
I gotta check the stream on YouTube. Okay, no, it actually shows up correctly. I don't know why it's showing up wrong. And now I'm gonna copy this and share it to...
Is it good now?
Yeah, it's fine.
Are we live?
We are live.
Oh, well, why don't you say that, man?
Hey, by the way, we're live.
I want to see John grow one of those Ted Lasso mustaches for one of these. If you're going to do video, I really, because I can't do it. Let's just face it, I can't do it. And you, I think, could. So if we could get that going, that whole kind of like 70s, I'm not quite a porn star, but I tried out mustaches, that'd be great.
Nah,
I
honestly let's can't not do that.
Because the second I do that, I'm going to realize just like how much like my dad I look. And that's bad.
I hope that's he sees rude. This. I really does. And I hope he sees it on Father's Day is when I hope he finds it. I want to send him a link.